But Donnelly had needed something different, something all his own.
Nia, I learned a new story from Ares's papa. Wanna hear?
No, Caledonia had said immediately, already annoyed with her brother's incessant storytelling.
There's a sea monster in the sky, and if you'd turn over and hoist your eyes, I could show it to you.
Hoist your eyes was something their parents said when they thought their children were too focused on one thing. In Caledonia's case, that almost always meant the surface of the ocean. Coming out of Donnelly's mouth, it was just condescending.
She ignored him and he continued. It ruled the ocean, terrifying the king and queen, and in order to appease it, they had to sacrifice their own daughter. They called it Cetus.
In his excitement, Donnelly had gripped Caledonia's shoulder in his small hands. She shoved him away with her elbow.
That's a terrible story, she said. I'm glad our parents aren't like that. Don't worry, Donnelly had said, inching backward with mischief in his eyes. A boy came to rescue her.
He was gone before Caledonia could demonstrate who among them required rescuing. His laughter rang throughout the ship like bells. Annoying sunbright bells. Thinking of him lost somewhere in Eric's fleet made her blood race. She imagined his dark curls still falling into his eyes. She wondered if he'd grown into his nose. She fretted that he'd forgotten his stories. He deserved a sister who would come for him. Rona's ghost sighed and clucked her tongue. At every sound, Caledonia pried open her eyes to look for her mother. But it was never a real ghost. It was a breeze through her open porthole, the pitchy slap of shallow waves against the hull. It was her own guilt over risking the lives of her crew based on the word of a bullet. Morning was still young when a tapping sounded at her door. Caledonia recognized the pattern and called, "Come in, Pi," without bothering to get out of bed. Pisces' tall frame was a shadow in the graying air. She slid through the door, pulling it shut behind her, then climbed into bed next to Caledonia. When she was settled, she whispered, "I think it's real. It has to be real, right?" Her dark eyes were wide and weary. She hadn't slept either, but not because of fear or guilt. "He has every reason to lie," Caledonia's caution ran as deep as the ocean.
But the details, Pisces forgot to whisper. No one could have guessed that about Donnelly if they hadn't heard him sing. That's real, isn't it? It has to be.
I think. Caution bent under the weight of her own hope.
I don't know, Pi.
A shimmer of tears caught the barely there light of dawn in Pisces' eyes. She smiled softly and pressed her fingers over Caledonia's tattoo.
You're hot.
Pisces ran hot, but this was more than usual.
Do you have a fever?
Careful of her wounded shoulder, Pisces snuggled into Caledonia's pillow.
It's just the healing process. Lovely Hime says a little heat is natural.
As much as Pisces worried over Caledonia, she'd turn herself inside out to keep Caledonia from doing the same for her. Most of the time it worked. But the old world had left behind a few indestructible things. Ship tech and fabrics and weapons. And a virus that burned through bodies like fire. Fevers were always cause for concern.
It barely hurts anymore, Pisces continued. And honestly, I feel like I could swim for miles right now.
Good. That's good. Caledonia's eyes drifted back to the trunk in the corner.
Rona wouldn't like this plan. You can't know that.
Pisces rolled onto her back, one hand coming to rest on the charm she'd worn around her neck for 4 years. It was a small glass circle, inside of which was pressed a single green plant. It had belonged to Ares, and she'd rescued it from the burnt husk of the ghost.
I think I can. She never would have risked it. The entire crew for two people? It's bad math. only if you're thinking about people as numbers.
Caledonia sighed slowly.
A captain has to think about people as numbers. It's the only way.
When a small number of your crew is unreachable, putting the larger number at risk is foolish, no matter who they are. If two people are cut off from the rest of the crew, you leave them behind and keep the rest alive.
In truth, Rona wouldn't have agreed with the approach Caledonia had taken for years. It was too risky, too antagonistic, and it had landed her ship and her crew in the sticky center of a bounty.
Pisces sat up suddenly.
Do you think she was leaving us on the beach that day?
Of course! Kala!
She had to, Caledonia frowned at her friend. It was their only chance.
Kala, think about it. There was a lot of time between your gunshots and the fight. They had time to weigh anchor and flee. But when we got to the beach, they were exactly where we'd left them. Because they were waiting for us.
What? Caledonia asked, feeling numb, trying to find some shred of evidence in her memory that suggested her friend was wrong.
They died because they loved us too much to leave,
Pisces continued, hand fisting around the charm.
Your mother might have been all rules all the time, but that moment changed her. She would want us to go for our brothers. More than that, she'd want us to get the ones responsible for their deaths.
I believe it, and so should you.
A mix of dread and fear washed over Caledonia. It was rare for Pisces to display so much raw anger, but every so often, it was there, peeking above the surface like a shark's fin.
This is our chance to do exactly that!
Pisces' cheeks were flushed with fever and determination. Her voice found its steepest notes when she added,
We can avenge them!
Caledonia believed every word. She believed that if Pisces ever discovered who was truly responsible for the destruction of the ghost, she wouldn't hesitate to bury a knife deep in their heart. Her heart. That day would come. But first, Caledonia would get her own revenge.
He's just a bullet, she said, thoughts turning to the boy in their hold. He's probably leading us straight to Eric.
Pisces laughed, pushing Caledonia's lips back into a smile.
Stop thinking it's a trap for 1 minute.
Just enjoy this feeling. Donnelly and Ares are alive!
It was such a dangerous dream.
Let her heart linger there too long, and Caledonia was sure it would suffer. But here with Pisces, under the worn sheet of her bed, she let herself believe it for just a moment. If Donnelly and Ares had survived, then maybe she could save them and redeem the smallest piece of her past.
I could hear him sing again,
she whispered, leaning her forehead against Pisces.
I could race him again,
Pisces rolled her head back and forth.
He's probably bigger than I am now.
Even 2 turns younger than his sister, Ares could cut a path through the ocean as well as she. And he was just as fearless. Where Donnelly was gentle, Ares was bold. But somehow, the two had been as inseparable as their older siblings.
I can't imagine Donnelly being taller than you. He was always so spindly and awkward.
The image landed harder than Caledonia expected, causing her heart to thump painfully in her chest.
Up, Caledonia said, climbing over her friend and out of the bed.
That's enough. We have work to do.
You held out longer than I thought you might, Pisces teased. Were those real emotions, or...
Caledonia threw her dirty shirt into her friend's face.
You're lucky you're wounded. Chapter 11. The sun was sliding pink rays over the lip of the porthole, and the scent of fresh tico wafted through the halls. The girls were up, dressed, and fed in moments. Tin was at the captain's side the instant she left the galley, giving a full report of the night's activities with a steady voice, though her hands seemed uneasy gripping the notebook Lace had used every day. "What's the temperature of the crew?" Caledonia asked. "Temperature?" Tin looked momentarily alarmed, afraid she'd missed something in her accounting. "The mood," Caledonia clarified. "How's everyone handling it?" "Lace." Tin narrowed her blue eyes and looked down at her list. It was an itemized record of their stores and duty rotations. Nothing that would help her answer this question. But she studied it for a long moment before coming to a decision. "We miss her. But the chatter is about the brothers." "What about them?" Caledonia asked, and when Tin hesitated, she covered the girl's hand with her own and added, "I need you honest, Tin. I need to hear more than the bright bits." Tin nodded twice and plunged ahead. "Everyone's with you. We know it's risky, and we won't all come back from it. But we're with you, Captain. They belong to us as much as they do to you." Maybe her morning with Pisces had left her too close to her own heart. But the news stunted her breath, and it took every bit of her control not to let it show on her face. For a second, she felt 51 sets of hands braced against her back, holding her up, pushing her forward. She could not let them down. "We're ready, Captain," Pisces called from a few feet away. Grateful for the distraction, Caledonia nodded her thanks to Tin, then turned sharply on her heel and followed Pisces across the deck. The map room was a windowless cube beneath the bridge. One wall was lined with shelves that contained the small number of maps they'd gathered over the years, each carefully labeled and organized according to region. This space had been Lace's domain. Anytime they found a new map, she spent hours in here studying it, trying to piece the old world together so that they might better understand the new one. The oldest maps contained large, unfamiliar land masses surrounded by many oceans. None of those land masses matched what they saw around them today. But Lace was determined to find some key that would unlock the past enough to explain their present. Maps of the Bullet Seas were few and frequently unreliable, but she had used them to piece together her own map. As they traveled, she filled in each new region with observations from the bridge. The northern region was the least detailed. The Rock Isles were mapped only along the eastern borders. To the west was a span of ocean known as the Perpetual Storm, and the Northwater Current was loosely tracked toward the Braids and beyond, though those rivers were just a suggestion of ink on paper. The southern quadrant was flush by comparison. There was the eastern peninsula, where the holster was clearly marked with an X, the Bone Mouth, where each island was drawn to represent the true shape of the archipelago. Trails of arrows indicated the directions of the currents. The net was marked with a series of hash marks, and beyond it, Lace had written simply, "The Outside." "A world in progress," she'd said. In addition to storing maps, this was also where the command crew gathered when they needed privacy. A second, larger table in the center of the room was circled by chairs. In the chair farthest from the door sat the Bullet. He was hunched over his hands, and though soaked through in sweat, he shivered in waves. Each breath he took seemed more painful than the last, and his skin was both flushed and blanched in places. There was no danger in him at this moment, yet Red Tooth stood behind him ready to quell any foolish action he might take. They'd all seen this before. Bullets his age needed silt every day to stay functional. And it had been 3 days since his last dose. The fever would intensify, and he would sweat until he ran out of salt. The shivering would turn to shudders, and before long, the hallucinations would begin. They could give him a dose, keep him in his mind for another day or two. But offering him a dose meant revealing to Hime what she didn't need to know. They'd taken refined silt from the last barge and meant to trade it when they reached Cloudbreak. Hime stood far from the bullet, with her back pressed into a corner. She tried to look unaffected by his tremors, but her discomfort showed in the constant twist of her hands. When she'd been at her worst, she fought anyone who came near. And the first time they'd put a sword in her hand and took her into battle, she'd fallen into a blind panic, lashing out indiscriminately. If it hadn't been for Red Tooth's intervention, she might have killed one of their own crew. As it was, Red Tooth walked away with a single slash on her right palm. Caledonia stood between Pisces and Amina facing the bullet. They needed all the information they could get from him while he was still coherent enough to give it. "Can you speak?" Caledonia stepped around the table, closing the distance between them. The bullet looked up, meeting her stern gaze and holding it. "Yes." Caledonia's fingers curled into a fist, but she didn't strike. "Name their ship." He swallowed, bracing against a violent shiver. "Electra." Caledonia ignored the distant part of her that regretted his pain and pressed on. "What sort of ship is she?" His shoulders jerked involuntarily before he could answer. "A hauler, deeper in the draft, slower than you. Heavier." "So we ram them," Red Tooth said, already excited by the prospect. "Knock them off balance and scatter the rats in the cold water." "You can't," the bullet spoke without invitation, eyes on Caledonia. "Why not?" Caledonia looked on him with unbridled irritation. "Their hull is electrified. Hit them before you take it out." Red Tooth loosed a string of her most colorful expressions. "How does it work?" Pisces asked. She'd taken a seat on the bullet's other side and was ready with a pencil and paper. The bullet struggled to keep his tone even as he spoke. "Electra bears a double hull, but it's not reinforced. The two hulls are separated. Only the external is insulated and charged with lethal voltage. It's meant to look weak enough to puncture, but the second your hull touches theirs..." He raised his hands and pressed his fingertips together. "That charge transfers to your ship, and everyone on board turns into a conductor." It was all too easy to imagine. The crush of metal against metal, the shrieks of her crew as their bodies filled with deadly electricity. It wasn't all that dissimilar from Amina's electric web. Only this was always live. "How the hell do we board a ship like that?" Pisces asked, her expression imploring as she looked at the bullet. "We disrupt the charge," Amina said. "But to disrupt that kind of charge, we'll need a lot of power. More than we have." "Can you find what you need in Cloudbreak?" Caledonia asked. Amina's shoulders lifted in a shrug. "We can find anything in Cloudbreak. Getting it is always the challenge." "If you can build something to kill that charge, I'll get you whatever you need," Caledonia said. "Can you do it?" Amina gave a determined nod. "Of course, Captain." She returned her attention to the bullet. "Now, tell us where we can intercept them." Clearing his throat, the bullet pulled his arms tight to his body and began to speak again. "Electra sails the Northwater conscription route every 10 months to collect conscripts from the colonies. She'll be there in 3 weeks. Her most vulnerable point will be when she's farthest west." The bullet took a steadying breath. Pisces looked concerned, but he pushed on. "It's an out-and-back run. They start at the farthest village and work their way back to avoid having too many conscripts on board at once." They all knew conscripts was code for kids. Eric swept the North Water at least once a year, taking a percentage of the children who were between 7 and 9 turns. How the colonies determined that percentage was up to them. There was nothing quite as terrible as turning a people in on themselves, making them police their own in service to a distant tyrant. Saving their brothers would be even sweeter if they could take down that ship in the process. The bullet shuddered harder, and this time Hime strode forward, hands raised.
No more. He needs rest.
He'll get his rest when the captain's good and done with him, Red Tooth snapped.
And if he doesn't get rest, he'll be no good to us at all.
Hime glared up at Red Tooth, unaware that behind her, Amina had moved a step closer.
Save your pity for someone who deserves it, Princelet, Red Tooth said, but she was backing down.
Caledonia studied the bullet for a long minute. We have what we need for now. Get him up.
Red Tooth hauled the boy to his feet and moved him around the table to the hatch.
Before they were through, Caledonia caught Red Tooth's arm.
I have him.
The girl fought against her frown this time, but it was there, tugging her face into a picture of concern.
Yes, Captain.
Caledonia gave the boy a shove.
Move, she ordered.
The boy stumbled forward. His steps were uneven and sloppy, but Caledonia noticed that he required no direction to return to the hold. In spite of having only made the trip twice, he remembered every turn. He stepped into the hold and immediately slumped onto a short stack of canvas, breathing hard. Caledonia smothered the unwelcome sympathy she felt at the sight. Red Tooth was right. He wasn't worth their pity, even if he looked pitiful. A ship with an electrified hull. She paused in the doorway.
That's what I said.
He barely moved, but his words carried an edge of aggression.
Seems like an incredible kind of weapon. Why haven't I heard of it before now?
Maybe your previous prisoners died too quick.
He was angry. Good. Angry was honest. Bullets never die quickly enough. He laughed. It was a rough, pained sound like sandpaper on metal.
I thought you enjoyed watching me suffer. I do.
She met his eyes again, and for the first time, they bore the hard edge of defiance. It didn't matter what he said. A bullet was a bullet. One day he'd prove that he was not worthy of any more trust than they'd already given. She was sure of it. And when he did, she'd be ready. With a blade in hand.
Chapter 12. The peaks of the Rock Isles appeared, gilded in the cool, fiery blue of dusk and rinsed in deep shadow. The mountain range was disconnected, separated by a circuitous, mostly impassable network of canals. Though the highest tips were frequently dusted in snow, the slopes bore some of the most arable lands around the Bullet Seas. Rich in resources and hard to reach, the mountains were home to Cloudbreak, a two-tiered market port that, by tradition and by circumstance, existed outside Eric's rule. Surrounding it all was an archipelago of jagged metal islands meant to break a ship's speed. Between those fabricated islands, the waters were littered with the decaying hulls of ships whose captains had tried force and failed. In a very real sense, it was a graveyard, and it made this a dangerous stop for anyone on the run. As hard as it was to get in, it was just as difficult to get out. They waited until morning to approach, when the market was sure to be open and a fine mist closed around the mountains. The Mors Navis moved at a crawl. Caledonia stood on the command deck, her sharp eyes steady on the dark water ahead, and selected a path through the jagged islands wide enough to accommodate them. Her ship was at the upper limit of what would be allowed to dock, much bigger, and she'd be forced to weigh anchor and take the bow boat in.
"What if word of the bounty has spread?" Amina stood next to the captain, mist gathering in small drops along the thick crest of her braids. "It will be more than bullet ships after us."
The thought had crossed Caledonia's mind. A bounty offered by Eric Ahare would appeal to more than just his loyal fleet. While Cloudbreak was not bullet territory, it was sure to be far from friendly. Control of the market had changed hands a dozen times in as many years. The current ruler, Hesperus Shreves, was known as the Sly King, a moniker earned by the way he managed to get the better end of any deal, no matter the odds. Even when confronted with Eric, the Sly King always seemed to come out unscathed. "That's why we waited for morning," Caledonia forced a confidence she didn't fully feel. She raised her hand into the swirling mist. "If we can move faster than it takes for this fog to rise, we'll be gone before the Sly King spots our ship in his harbor." Amina's mouth flattened. "The weather is a fickle ally." "Yes, but it's all we have. Besides, there may be no bounty." Even as she said it, something whispered that the notion was false. No one sunk 7, now 8, of Eric's bail barges without consequence.
"I feel certain we'll know one way or another before long," Amina said, echoing Caledonia's own thoughts.
Where Pisces was the emotional balance to Caledonia's hard-edged approach, Amina offered grim insights with a selfless kind of ease that always felt like trust. Amina didn't expect the worst to happen, but she was never surprised by it, and she always trusted Caledonia to carry them through it. The ship slid past a long row of sharp metal teeth, and then suddenly the docks appeared scattered around the base of the mountain with no obvious method of organization. This was Lower Cloudbreak. As it was both a wharf and a market, they might find anything here from quick ship fixes to protein bricks if they were lucky. Caledonia saw clusters of smaller trade ships and two other vessels as broad as hers, but no bullet ships among them.
The Sly King of Cloudbreak had an understanding with Eric.
Bullet ships stayed out of the docks, and Hesperus, well, Caledonia wasn't sure what Hesperus offered in exchange, but it was guaranteed to be a mark against him. Usually, this was as far as Caledonia liked to go. But for anything of greater value, like the charges Amina needed to build an electromag and the ammo they'd need for the fight that followed, they'd have to travel to Upper Cloudbreak. That was a trip that involved riding the rope lifts up the towering cliffs, separating Caledonia from her ship for hours. One of the larger vessels had taken the dock at the farthest edge, which had the greatest vantage over all comings and goings. The other had taken a spot near the Cloudbreak lifts, giving their crew fast access to their ship should they need it. The smaller vessels filled in around them were probably exactly the trade ships they appeared to be, while a few likely carried rogue crews like her own. If any had wind of this bounty, this wouldn't go smoothly. But while bullet ships were equipped with radios for quick communication, almost everyone else avoided them to evade detection. Joining them on the bow, Red Tooth sucked her teeth.
"No good option," she said darkly.
Caledonia nodded in agreement. "I suspect it's merely the first set of no good options of the day."
"Tin!"
she called, raising a hand and gesturing to a berth nestled between two of the smaller ships. Of the two larger vessels, she'd rather be near the one that hadn't picked the most advantageous spot, and this put them closer to the lifts. Tin nosed the Moors Navis in the right direction and slid the ship into the available space. The bow thrusters churned, slowing them down and nudging them right up to the dock. It was well done, even if Lace or Caledonia would have done it differently. No sooner had the ship rubbed against the thick bumpers than a dozen merchants appeared, holding up their wares. They offered everything from fresh fruits, salted meat, and wine to advertisements for tar or oakum or repair services. Caledonia's crew began the work of securing the ship and lowering the rear gangway. Others took up strategic posts, lounging here and there as if casually observing their new surroundings. Casually, but with guns close at hand. "Time to go," Caledonia called, and when she saw only Red Tooth and Amina, she asked, "Where's Pi?" As if on cue, a deep, groaning cry echoed through the hull of the ship. It was not the first they'd heard of the bullet's withdrawal, but without wind and water to dull the sounds, this one raked across the deck like the slow twist of metal. A few seconds later, Hime emerged from the companionway with a frowning Pisces not far behind. Pisces wore her bulky green jacket to hide her bandage from view, but the sweat on her brow was visible to everyone. The fever Caledonia feared had arrived in force. "Wounds infected. She needs a doctor." Hime's usually gentle expression showed signs of irritation. Her eyes landed on Caledonia, and she lifted her hands. "I need to come and see the doctor with her." "I don't need a doctor. I need rest," Pisces protested, eyes traveling up the cliffs toward Cloudbreak. She was not fond of heights, preferring the suffocating press of water to nearly anything else. "Just rest, and I'll be fine." At the next howl from the dregs of the ship, Pisces' expression pinched just enough to tell Caledonia that this reluctance to leave had nothing to do with the rope lifts. An alarm rang in Caledonia's head, loud and clear. Pisces' sympathy for that boy was already a distraction, already having an impact on how she made decisions. "Hime says you're not fine, and I trust her judgment on the subject more than yours. You're going," Caledonia stated, shouldering one of the four large sacks of solar scales they'd use for trade. To Hime, she stated, "You're staying." With a heavy sigh, Pisces reached for one of the sacks. Before she could swing it onto her back, Hime caught the strap in her own hand, neatly pulling it away and shouldering the load. "She can't carry it," she said. "I can." "Hime," Caledonia began, voice suddenly soft, "it's too dangerous, and I need you here." "I'm not afraid of danger," she insisted, the motions of her hands growing increasingly agitated. "I'm stronger than you think. I would show you if you would only give me the chance." This was delicate ground. After injuring Red Tooth in battle, Hime had proven herself invaluable as a healing hand. She'd taken command of every health concern the ship had ever encountered, and they trusted her thoroughly in that regard. But whenever Silt entered the picture, Caledonia found herself trudging the line between protecting Hime's heart and protecting the rest of her crew. "You are strong," Caledonia agreed, "and we need you to keep that way. Can you honestly tell me you're ready to be around a market where Silt is openly peddled?" Hime clasped her hands against her apron, frustration blazing in her eyes. She looked from Pisces to Caledonia to the sack hanging from Red's grip. Finally, Amina moved to her side, lifting Hime's tight hands in her own and smoothing her thumbs across her knuckles. Hime so rarely let anyone touch her hands, but Amina was an exception. When they looked into each other's eyes, anyone near them disappeared. "Princelet," Amina soothed, sure not to grip Hime's hands too tightly. "That boy will draw attention if he keeps this up. You're the only one who understands what he's going through. We need you to help him so he can help all of us." This mollified Hime somewhat, but disappointment sat heavy in the bend of her mouth. She nodded, hands lingering in Amina's before dropping her bag and taking a small step back. "Don't let Pisces carry anything. She'll fall. And find a doctor with antibios. Expensive, but it's what she needs." Caledonia nodded. "Got it."
Amina shouldered her sack. Redtooth shouldered the remaining two. Pisces pulled her jacket closed, and as the four of them headed to the gangway, Caledonia instructed Tin to give the harbor master a bribe decent enough to find the best deals on the necessary repairs and a little extra for a heads up on any trouble. Prioritize fresh foods according to Far's list. If there's a goat, see what you can do about making it ours. Keep the girls working on that patch in the stern. It needs fortifying. And if you spy trouble, get out of here in a hurry. Remember the rendezvous? Tin nodded. I remember. Good. Stay steely. They made their way down the wharf and up the rocky shore toward the lifts. There were fishing crews sorting their early morning catch, traders packing their pallets to be hauled up to Cloudbreak, and the occasional man or woman left behind by their crew to guard the boat. They noticed Caledonia as much as she noticed them, but if any of them knew about the bounty, they gave no sign. The system of lifts was impressive. Thick cords of rope, slick with oil to keep the moisture out, supported wood or metal pallets of all sizes. There were pallets barely large enough for a single person, and others that might support half of Caledonia's crew at once. The ropes spiraled hundreds of feet up the cliff walls, disappearing into the mist. Midway up was a row of yellow flags. They fluttered limply in the gentle breeze, signaling that the winds were likely to be nearly as calm at the top of the cliff. Considering they were about to trust their lives to someone they couldn't see, it was far from comforting. Redtooth tested several pallets, bouncing in the center to ensure the material was sturdy, before selecting one big enough for the four of them and their goods. This one, she said at last, standing atop a wooden pallet with slats spaced several inches apart. The planks are hardy, and the spacing should help if the wind is stronger up there. And since all we can see is mist and more mist, I like this better than the possibility of slick metal. Best of no good options, round two. Right, Captain? Right. Let's load up. Pisces groaned. Caledonia's own stomach cinched around her breakfast. Amina, however, stepped lightly onto the pallet, testing the ropes as if she might climb all the way up to Upper Cloudbreak. They secured their sack in the center of the flat, each taking a corner to keep the pallet balanced. Then, with a hard shake of a rope next to the painted image of a bell, the pallet lifted from the ground and they were drawn upward. It was faster than any of them expected. Pisces sucked in a sharp breath, and Redtooth laughed while Caledonia fixed her gaze on the diminishing shape of her ship. Cold wind pushed down on them from above, dragging Caledonia's hair into her eyes. The mist thickened like a blanket, and it wasn't long before the Moor's Navis was only a blurry outline against a gray background. Then, it was gone. For several minutes they traveled upward at a dizzying pace. It was safe to assume they'd climbed more than half a mile before the pallet began to slow. One moment, all they could hear was the creaking of the ropes, and the next, the air filled with the soft whistle of a dozen pulleys moving overhead. The sounds grew louder. The pallet slowed even more, and soon they stopped under the dim outline of several cranes curling over the cliff above. Ropes spiraled downward from each crane, disappearing into the mist. All but Pisces climbed carefully to their feet, hands gripping the ropes for support. The pallet swayed in the breeze. For the first time, Caledonia was thankful that the mist obscured how far they'd traveled. Directly across from their pallet, there was a small opening carved into the wall, but it was several feet away and barely wide enough for a single body to squeeze through. "Do we jump?" Redtooth asked, not nearly horrified enough by her own question. "You first," Amina said. "Someone's coming," added Pisces in a choked voice. They heard him before they saw him, the heels of his boots striking the stone at a neat clip. Caledonia imagined someone tall and broad,
which turned out to be exactly not what this man was. He was no taller than Caledonia, with sloping narrow shoulders that seemed designed for the slender cut of the cave through which he walked. He was pale-skinned and tidy, with a yellow scarf bundled around his shoulders. When he saw them, his steps faltered, and a crease of confusion appeared on his wide forehead.
"You're all girls,"
he cried, peering down as though he expected to find a man somewhere on their pallet.
"And so young."
"Only in years." Amina was the closest to him, angling her body to partially shield Caledonia behind her. Her tone carried a warning.
"Well, it's no matter."
He shook his head as if to convince himself before continuing.
"Welcome to Cloudbreak. I'm the town bell, but you can just call me Clag. How was your trip?"
His interested tone set Caledonia's nerves on edge. "Very smooth," she answered.
"Good, good. No one got sick, did they? It can be unsettling on the stomach for some. Takes a while to get your sky belly about you."
Though the cheer in his voice was relentless, his eyes moved from Caledonia and the girls to their sacks piled in the center of the pallet, appraising.
"Our stomachs are fine, but if you don't mind, we'd like firm ground under our feet again."
In her peripheral vision, she saw Redtooth's hand stray near the gun at her hip. Clag, however, was unmoved.
Of course, let's get on with it. Just a few questions and I'll have you on your way. Whichever way that ends up being."
He added that last with a private laugh.
"Business in Cloudbreak?"
Caledonia motioned to the four sacks.
"Trade."
"Will you be applying for a stall permit?"
"No, trade only."
Caledonia breathed through the part of her that wanted to demand speed.
"All in good health?"
He peered specifically at Pisces.
"Your friend's looking a little peaked, a little shiny across the forehead."
"She's injured," Caledonia said in a firm voice, eager to dispel his suspicions. "We'll be engaging the services of a doctor while we're here."
Clag's jaw worked back and forth for a minute as he considered.
"We don't admit anyone who might have the pale fire. Or any other fevers, for that matter."
"I don't have the fire."
With a grimace, Pisces pulled herself to her feet and slowly shrugged out of her jacket, exposing the bandage on her shoulder.
"Do you need to see the wound?" she asked, challenging.
Clag waved a dismissive hand in the air.
"No, no. Ah, my dear, that looks painful. I do hope someone here can help. And I'm glad, very glad that it's not a disease.
For your sakes, of course. And how long do you expect to remain in Cloudbreak?"
"Only the day." Even as she answered, Caledonia felt the strain of time. The Mors Navis was not an inconspicuous ship. The longer they remained in port, the more likely it was that news of the bounty would reach Cloudbreak.
"That's not much of a stay, is it? Trouble in your wake?"
"No," Caledonia answered quickly. Too quickly. One of Clag's pale, bushy eyebrows rose.
"The Sly King doesn't take kindly to those who bring trouble to his port." "Not kindly at all."
"The Sly King did everything possible to stay on the right side of Eric Ahare. If he knew Caledonia and her crew were docked in his port, she was sure he'd do everything in his power to keep them there until he could hand them over." Caledonia forced herself to take a full breath before she answered again.
"No trouble, we just have somewhere else to be."
And she intended to be long gone before any of Eric's fleet sought her here.
"Very good. That's all my questions. Thank you for your candid answers," he said, clasping his hands before him expectantly.
"So," Caledonia began, "how do we get in?"
"Oh, you don't, just yet. There's still the matter of payment for your journey. Trade or coin, both are acceptable. But notes of service are no longer legal tender in Cloudbreak by order of the Sly King."
"We can pay. How much?" Caledonia asked,
trying to strike a balance between nonchalance and irritation. Clagg studied her, a devious gleam in his pale blue eyes.
Well, that all depends. Are you pleased with the service?
Yes, Caledonia answered with caution.
Good. Then, whatever you think is fair.
Fair? The last time they'd made this journey, the price had been set, and her cargo less precious. As the pallet swayed in mid-air, Caledonia reached inside her coat and withdrew the very small amount of silt they'd stripped from the barge. Small, but valuable. She held out a single casing, its bright orange color leaving no doubt as to what it was or where it came from. Clagg's eyebrows rose with interest.
How many? He asked.
6 doses, pure, straight from the bullet fleet.
6.
Throw it over. Caledonia hesitated for just a breath. The pallet swayed again, ropes protesting with a tinny shriek. He could take the doses and drop them or take the doses and demand more. She had no leverage here, and no choice. She tied the leather cord tight around the small bag, then tossed it into Clagg's waiting hand. Now Clagg pulled a small notebook from his back pocket. He flipped through a few moments, pointer finger running quickly down each page. Finally, he tapped a page 3 times, then snapped the book shut. "So nice meeting you," he said. He waggled his fingers in front of that endlessly cheerful smile. Without another word, he pulled a cord hidden just inside the tunnel and turned to leave. Before Caledonia could speak again, the pallet gave way beneath them, and they fell. Chapter 13. They hit something hard but continued to fall. Their bodies slid and scraped over stone, and all around them echoed Pisces' cries. When they landed 1 long minute later, their legs were too soft to support them. All except for Amina, who landed lightly on her feet, braids spooling around her body. Caledonia pushed herself to standing, eyes searching out every entrance to the small chamber in which they now found themselves. The room was a roughly hewn cave, with a small tunnel to their right, another to their left, and a larger one directly ahead. Above them was the hole through which they'd fallen, and as Caledonia craned her neck to see the top, the thin stream of light that had followed them down dried up. Doubtless there'd been a trap door waiting just beneath their pallet to catch them as they fell. A warning would have been nice, Caledonia thought grimly. Amina pulled Pisces carefully to her feet, brushing gentle hands over the feverish girl's cheeks while Red Tooth shouldered 2 of the sacks and Caledonia investigated each of the tunnels.
"There's a murmur in this one," she said, pointing down the largest of the 3.
"Sounds like town."
"Oh, good. On your feet already."
Clagg's cheerful voice came from behind, surprising them all. He emerged from one of the smaller tunnels, looking pleased but unsurprised to find they'd all made the drop. "My apologies for the delay. Takes a bit of time to get down all those stairs."
"Apologies for the delay?"
Amina took a step toward the man, and while his smile stayed firmly in place, his right leg gave an involuntary flinch.
"Been a while since you've come to port, has it?"
"Yes, the drop can be startling. But I'm sure you understand it's a necessary security precaution. Can't just have people pushing their way off the lifts without a proper interview anymore. It's the cost of keeping our little town safe for business."
"You could have killed us," Caledonia protested.
But Clagg only chuckled, shaking his head.
"Nonsense. It's not even gusty today, and physics is a good friend if you know what you're doing. Now, I've come to give you your tokens," he said, producing 4 blue chips marked with a sequence of 5 numbers.
He moved around the room, dropping them 1 at a time into each of their hands.
"Trips down are complimentary, but only with the token."
If they're complimentary, why do we need a token? Asked Amina.
Clag smiled a knowing smile.
We just like to know who's come and gone, that's all. It has no value for trade, but keep it on you.
Somewhere in the tunnels, a bell rang.
Clag perked up, stepping across the room toward the tunnel opposite the one he'd come through.
He moved silently, Caledonia noticed now, completely at home in what must be a network of tunnels and stairways and trap doors for each lift they'd seen on the beach below.
When he reached the threshold, he paused, sighed, turned back to Caledonia. He was still cheerful, but something of his demeanor had changed.
I'm not supposed to do this sort of thing, but...
He looked over Caledonia's shoulder where Pisces stood.
The dock you want is named Triseus. She's in the body quarter. She'll get you right,
and she won't take a pound of flesh to get you there.
Thank you, Clag, said Caledonia.
But Clag only shook his head and turned swiftly into the tunnel, muttering something about soft hearts and hard worlds. Pisces was slumped against the cave wall when Caledonia turned to look, and suddenly she knew exactly what had spurred Clag to generosity. Pisces' skin was a pale gray-brown, devoid of its usual sunny tones, and the sweat on her brow now covered her entire face. Swiftly, Caledonia swung her sack over one shoulder, propping her friend up with the other. Amina and Redtooth flanked them, and together they moved as quickly as Pisces' leeching strength would allow.
Almost there, Caledonia spoke softly to her friend, hoping it wasn't a lie. Just hold on to me. We'll find this Doc Triseus in no time.
I'm fine, Cala, Pisces said in a breathy voice,
but her arm curled across Caledonia's shoulder and she leaned close, steps increasingly clumsy. The tunnel was blessedly short, and soon the four girls found themselves at the mouth of a teeming market, situated in a ravine with mountain peaks rising on all sides. Perched above it all, a stronghold of overlapping concentric circles sat high on the southern wall. Before them, stalls of every size sprawled in a chaotic press. They were wedged together in whatever space was available, flying flags or streamers or painted metal shields to attract attention. The cold air was spiked with the scents of roasting nuts and spiced meats and filled with the cries of vendors hawking their wares. In every direction they were met with a flood of people navigating the haphazard paths between stalls. The whole thing seemed to operate on some internal logic that was completely foreign to the girls. Red cursed, Pisces drooped, and Amina vanished. Caledonia held tightly to Pisces. She studied the flow of traffic before her, certain that if she could just find something that looked like a main artery, they would manage. The longer she watched, the less certain she became. This place was designed to disorient, to put newcomers off their balance and keep them there. Amina was back in moments, a small girl trailing in her wake. She was young, only 13 at most, with beautiful scrolling scars over the tan skin of her left cheek and forehead. Her hair was a glossy black, tied up in multicolored rags that fluttered lightly as she walked. Right away, Caledonia marked how her eyes darted over the three of them, and the easy way she strolled in this unsettling din with hands in her pockets. She was wiser than her years might suggest. Of that, Caledonia was certain.
Ladies, Amina said. Standing beside her, the girl smiled. This is Nettle. I've engaged her to be our guide.
You won't find better.
Nettle's voice was still young, clinging to the higher notes like cresting waves. Her vowels bent over the ends of her words, softening and stunting them in a way that reminded Caledonia of Amina's own accent.
I know every inch of this place.
You're just a child.
Shifting her attention from the girl to Amina, Redtooth repeated.
She's just a child.
You're hardly more than that, Nettle shrugged.
I understand you're looking for Doc Tritius. This way.
Without waiting for approval, Nettle stepped into the flow of the crowd.
How do we know she'll take us to the right place? Redtooth asked when Nettle was out of earshot.
Never underestimate the girls of this world, Amina chided, stepping out in front.
Nettle was easy enough to track. Though she was short, her multicolored hair ties shone brightly in the crowd. She led them on a seemingly random path through the shop fronts, occasionally cutting down an alley so narrow none of the girls would have considered it a path. The smell of spicy meats, sweet stewed plums, and fresh bread made Caledonia's mouth water. She was tempted to stop and spend some of their precious coin on a quick meal for all of them. But the look she caught from the crowd encouraged her to keep moving. Most watched Pisces with a wary eye, sure she carried the fire or some other disease. But others looked on the four young girls with a hunger that set Caledonia's teeth on edge. Nettle moved at a quick clip, but always seemed aware of where they were, pausing to let them catch up if she'd got too far out in front. The crowd spoke and shouted in a handful of different languages. Some Caledonia recognized, others she didn't. The people were grizzled and cautious, but none bore the orange bands of a bullet's bandolier. At least, not where it would be seen. The only identifying marks were the men and women in short black capes, the shoulders studded with the cerulean blue bands of the Sly King. When they passed, people made room, held up their stall permits, or ducked between shops to avoid them. The presence of the Sly King was strong, and not entirely welcoming. On either side, vendors sold everything a person could possibly desire. There were furs in a variety of colors from the brightest fuchsia to inky black. Salted meats perfectly prepared for long hauls at sea. Solar tech, gunpowder, ropes and netting, and origin seeds guaranteed to sprout. At first, Caledonia tried to mark the vendors they might return to later. But the farther they went, the less possible that became. Even as they passed, the streets were changing. One vendor would just as quickly close down their makeshift stall as another would set up without a care for the flow of traffic. Caledonia would simply have to trust that if Nettle knew enough to get them to Doc Tritius, she also knew where to find the other goods they needed. It had been nearly an hour by the time they stopped. Pisces' pace decreased rapidly, and even with Amina shouldering Caledonia's pack, it was slow going through the crowd. Finally, Nettle stopped in front of a medium-sized tent. The body quarter was less overwhelming than the main market, with fewer open stalls and more closed tents. Here, the tent flaps were marked with simple paintings of the services available inside. Their path took them down a row of ornamental workers offering tattoos and scars and piercings, to one of pleasure workers, and finally, to the healers. Most advertised the part of the anatomy they specialized in treating with a rough drawing of a foot or head or belly posted somewhere on the tent. But the flap of this tent was closed and painted only with the shape of a serpent wrapped around a staff. Above it, blocky red letters spelled out the name Tritius.
"I'm a girl of my word," Nettle said proudly, holding a hand toward the tent.
There was no bell, no means of announcing one's presence, so Caledonia pushed through the tent flap with a wilting Pisces leaning heavily into her body.
"Hello? Dr. Tritius?" she called,
but the question was unnecessary. The space was as small as it seemed from the outside and smelled strongly of dry, minty herbs. On one side of the room was a raised bed. On the other, a narrow bench and work table near a chest containing dozens of tiny drawers. It was the first thing Caledonia had seen in the whole market that looked somewhat permanent. As they entered, a woman stood up from the bench. Her skin was a cool, shadowed ochre, with a wide scatter of freckles across her face. Her brown hair twisted and piled neatly atop her head,
was threaded with silver cords. She met them with an easy smile, but didn't rush forward to greet them.
"Do all of you need attention?" she asked,